Welcome to another episode of the Poetically Yours Extended Podcast. I'm Yvonne Booz. This month, we are giving you a bonus episode. I finally got an opportunity to chat with Rockford's Poet Laureate, Jenna Goldsmith. Jenna became Rockford's second Poet Laureate in 2023. In this episode, she gives us some much-needed advice.
Don't put the lotion and the toothpaste next to each other. That's the explanation on your bathroom counter. Just keep it nice and separate, one on each side.
No, but really, don't do it. She also talks about how being the Poet Laureate inspires her. Take a listen. Jenna, thank you so much for taking part in the Poetically Yours Extended Podcast. This conversation is long overdue. How are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you doing, Yvonne?
I am well, and it looks like you recovered from the taco story you were just telling me.
Yes, I am. Those of you in the future who are listening to this might remember a very windy day in Rockford, and that's the day that we're recording. Don't take your food outside unless you have a way to hold on to it. Let's just say that.
And I told Jenna, that's the poem. As she's talking, I'm like, that could be a pretty freaking great poem if she wants to do that. All right. So Jenna, I looked at a conversation you were having with someone at the Rockford Public Library. And so I kind of got a little behind the scenes information about your journey as a poet. For those who didn't hear it, in that particular interview, you were talking about how you didn't like poetry even in high school, but you didn't really start writing until you got into college, or really not just writing, but really getting into the craft when you got into college. Can you take a moment to tell me that feeling you had when you found out you had to take that one poetry class because there was nothing else you could take?
Yeah, so I love telling this story because I think sometimes people assume that poets, you know, are born poets. They come out of, you know, come into this world and they just love poetry and it's very innate to who they are. And as I've talked about with others in town, that was just not the case for me. And in fact, the moment that you're talking about, Yvonne, where I realized that because of, you know, the powers that be and the institution of the college that I was going to, I needed to take one more creative writing class, even though I had already taken it at Rock Valley College. I was down at Illinois State, and in order to get my English degree, they said one more creative writing workshop. So I scoured the catalog, and my advisor said, well, there's only one spot open and it's in the poetry class. And I was not happy about that. Looking back, I don't know why. I mean, you know, chalk it up to just being like a young person, but I had this kind of overinflated response, and there was some crying involved in a stairwell that will go, you know, untalked about here. I was a reluctant poetry writer. And I think it was because the poetry that I had encountered up to that time in my life didn't really reach me. And so luckily, the course that I happened to be in had a very dynamic professor. I'm still in touch with him today, Professor Joe Amato. And he started reading from a book, just kind of walked into the room, started reading from a book. And I was really captivated and touched by it. And therein began at least my poetry writing life. I was a writer before, but I was not writing poetry.
Can you tell me about some of the things you were writing before that?
I wrote essays. You know, I was raised in a household with lots of books, lots of writing. I remember at a young age, my grandma would let me type on her typewriter, which I thought was really cool. And when I started school at Rock Valley College, I thought that I would become a journalist. And I started writing for the paper there, the Valley Forge. I was the police reports editor, which was an amazing job to be able to really see like the seedier parts of RVC. They're not that seedy, believe me, but at the time it was really exciting to kind of see what was happening behind the scenes at RVC. And then what I would do was take those reports, which were very, you know, formulaic and not very interesting, and I would weave them into a narrative, and that was what we would put into the paper. So I was doing journalistic writing up to that point, and I thought that that was my future. And what I found was that it was this very thing that we're doing right now was actually really anxiety producing for me at that time. I think given some time, I could have grown into it, but I wanted to write in a more secretive manner, like something that was more less in the public eye and more just for me. And so it's kind of ironic that I'm in this role that I'm in today, which is a very public facing role. But at least at that time, I moved away kind of from that journalism way of writing to more creative poetry writing. But I still see parts of that in the poetry that I even write today.
I'm curious about your anxiety as a journalist, and I write poetry as well. But I think when I think about being a journalist, the anxiety I get is, am I saying it right? Did I spell the name right? Like, am I being accurate for these people who are trusting me to tell their story? Can you tell me, do you know where the anxiety from you came from when it came to journalistic writing?
It's such an interesting question, and I've thought about it over the years, because, you know, I see that time as, on the one hand, some of the best time of my whole life. I thrived at the Valley Forge. I still talk to the other news writers that I worked alongside to this day. And it was a very formative experience for me, just like being in the newsroom, going to conferences with other writers. But what really was hard for me was talking to people, like getting the scoop, you know, going up to somebody and saying, I'm Jenna, I'm here with the Valley Forge. Can I get a moment of your time? Oh my gosh, I would be up all night before I had to do something like that, which, you know, for a college student, that doesn't really help with the other work that you're trying to do if you're panicked about something that you essentially have to do every day. And it was a really supportive environment. I mean, we were a small staff, so we were doing everything. Like, we were going out and doing interviews. At some point, I remember Billy Culpa, the editor-in-chief, who is still in town, handing me a camera and being like, and you're also going to take photos of this event. And I was like, oh my gosh, okay. You know, we were just kind of doing what needed to be done, but talking to people was really freaking me out. And again, today it's ironic because I have no problem doing that, but I really had to grow into it.
Oh, wow. Now, I also saw in that same interview that you have a doctoral degree. Tell me, why did you think that was something that you wanted or needed to do?
Oh my gosh, who knows? I love that I was able to study poetry to that extent and that deeply. It's a privilege to be able to do that work, and I'm really honored that I was able to do it at that time. It is certainly not necessary. I'll say that. You know, that's another thing that I like to tell people that I meet. You don't have to have a degree in poetry or creative writing to write. You don't have to have a degree to appreciate writing. All you have to do is read. And I wanted to read in a very specific way. And so I saw the degree as a means to an end. And it was. Now I get to teach, and a, you know, an academic world has opened up to me because I have the keys to that in some way. And I'm very fortunate to have that, but it's certainly not necessary. And, you know, what I think the degree enabled me to do at its core is to just have such a vast knowledge of poetry, because I was afforded so much time to study it. And so I have a really encyclopedic knowledge of poetry because I just had so many years of exposure to it. But it's also something that really gave me the opportunity to travel a lot, meet poets, hear poets read. And so I feel, you know, really lucky to have had that experience.
And was that 6 years that you did that?
Yes, so 6 years, and I was at the University of Kentucky down in Lexington, which I loved. I loved being there. I had never lived in the South when I moved down there, so it was a great experience for me as a Midwesterner to live in a different region of the country, especially such a rich writing region. Kentucky has an incredible writerly community and literary community and literary history. And so I just got to bask in that while I was down in Kentucky. And to this day, I'm still in touch with a lot of the writers that I met down there.
Now, usually during this this particular interview process, I do take a moment and let the poet say some poetry. So I think it's about time for you to share something with us. So take your time. If you need to pull something up, I can wait, but I would love to hear you recite some of your work.
Okay, so I think because of the moment that we are in, maybe I will read, let's see if I can bring it up here. Golly.
And I just love how most poets are ready to read their poetry.
I know, it's like we're just nutty professors at the end of the day. I want to read the poem that I actually wrote for to commemorate the Pride Parade, which just happened in Rockford. We had our very first Pride Parade here, and I was tapped by the Pride Committee, the Pride Parade Committee, to write a poem for their commemorative book, which is very cool. And so I think what I'm going to do is read the poem that I wrote for them. So just
okay.
Here. This is very, very new. Very new. So this is actually the first time that I think anybody will have heard this. So the poem is called Yesterday, My Second First Pride Parade. And it is written on the occasion of Rockford's first official Pride Parade, June 1st, 2024. I've been lucky enough to have two first Pride Parades in my life. A first Pride Parade is a coming out story. Mine was Chicago. No exes yet, but scared to run into my dad, excited in a gray hoodie and rainbow macrame. All prides have characters, scenes, a setting, and the weather. Midwest prides feature rain, sometimes in the morning or just an afternoon monsoon to cool or bake us for night, or an all-day rain that mutes the rainbow pop of everything. Mine had the morning kind and a missed train, red line in the wrong direction, end of the line McDonald's. The stranger, a young nurse in her scrubs, sees our wide eyes, Belvedere in blue bandanas, speeds us down the Dan Ryan, back to the city, and too late, we learn to stay awake in the Palmer House lobby. Still, we couldn't fix our rookie mistake, and the car accident breaks Jeremy's leg, Fez's teeth. I love you, boys. These were prides for kids in the sticks. Rainbows were in cities. And after the rain or shine, yesterday at home, a second first Pride Parade. No nurses or trains, but I walked the whole route alone, wept my weeping, and then we were together, state and Maine, and it poured, the all-day kind, up the route, coffee from my cafe, down the route, my neighborhood, my street, friends, everybody smiling and drenched, wave a homograph for water, hand, and happiness.
Oh my goodness, I love the description that you use for that. And especially for those who know Chicago and the Red Line, and it's like you put us there in that place. And that was a great example of how poetry really does tell a story, or it gives you history that you may not hear anywhere else. I forget, I was talking to someone who said that to me. Oh, it was Amy Newman, an English professor. Her and I have this other segment called Poetry on the Page. And sometimes, even after the recording, we are still talking. We're still talking about things. So that reminded me of the conversation I was having with her. So, did you live in Chicago for a little bit after you came back home to Illinois?
I didn't live in Chicago. When I came back to live in Illinois, I actually moved down to Bloomington for a year. And then after about a year, I came back up to Rockford.
And Bloomington, that's where Illinois State is. So
Yes.
I get the connection there. Now you came back to Rockford, and by that time, Rockford had already started its Poet Laureate program. We had Christine Swanberg. Tell me, what made you interested in becoming a Poet Laureate, especially at the fact that you had been away from the state or from the city for so long? What made you think, oh, you know, this is something I think I want to do?
I definitely didn't think of it that way. I remember seeing and my heart goes out to Christine. She was Poet Laureate during the pandemic, and that was a really difficult time for her, right? Because I'm sure the things that she had in mind to do during her tenure were just not possible. And so I remember seeing, on social media, because at this time I was, like you said, living away. I was seeing things on social media about Rockford getting a poet laureate, and I was really intrigued. I'll use the word intrigued by that, just because I knew even Chicago didn't have a poet laureate at that time. So I knew of it. However, when I moved back to the area, my mom actually, who is on Facebook, she saw that they were putting out a call for Poet Laureate. And I looked at the criteria for, for the role, and I thought, oh gosh, I'm not qualified for this at all. And I didn't plan on applying. And she was like, you should do it, just do it, you never know. So I did it kind of for her, honestly, not thinking that I would make it into the interview process. And there was an interview process, and it went really well. And then one morning I just got a call from Mary McNamara Bernstein at the Arts Council to inform me that I had, gotten this honor, and it was great. But I definitely did not, it wasn't something that I was like waiting for the application to open one day. It was something that I had to kind of think about how I would fit into that role and how that role would really fit into my life. I mean, I think that's something unanticipated about this role is that it's, if you want it to be, it's quite involved. If you don't want it to be, if you don't want it to be, it doesn't have to be. But I have really utilized the role to get involved in the community, meet people, and to just try to get poetry into every corner of our city.
How has being the Poet Laureate helped you in your writing journey?
Oh my goodness, it has helped so much. I mean, I don't even know where to start. From a practical level, I am commissioned for a lot of poems. And so, any poet will tell you that any extra motivation to write is well received because you don't always want to write. Even though you love it, it's still hard. So there's always a lot of like avoiding writing that's also going on. But the Poet Laureate position, again, if you want it to be, it can be highly motivating because entities are contacting you for poems. So, for instance, in a couple of weeks, I'll be reading a poem at the Rockford Public Library's Adult Online High School graduation, which I'm really honored to be reading at. A few weeks ago, I read a poem at the YMCA's yearly gala that was commissioned. I was commissioned for a poem from the symphony. I was commissioned from the Pride Committee. So on a practical level, a lot of entities want poetry, and that's highly motivating. But I'm also just really inspired. I meet all kinds of people through this role. I meet artists and I meet activists and I meet business people and public servants, and all of those meetings are deeply inspiring to me. And poetry does come out of just the everyday associations that I'm making with people. And I wouldn't be making those associations if I wasn't in this role, or it would be much harder to. So that's how it's influenced my writing process.
I like how you say we as poets don't want to write, but we do, but we can. It's really weird because I'm always writing in my head, and I say, I'm gonna take some time and I gotta sit down. I got all these poems floating around. I gotta get them out, but I never make the time. What do you think the deal is with that? I go through that a lot. I admire the poets who are retired, who can get up and write every day.
Oh my gosh. And you read those like essays that writers will, I wake up at 4 a.m. and I sit down and I have my cup of coffee and then I light my candle, and I'm just like, that's never gonna be me. I have to accept that's never, I'm never gonna be the candle lighter. That's how I think about it. And even when I have deadlines, I sit down and do it. I'm not somebody to wait till the last minute. I will admit that it's too nerve-wracking. But I am not the person who's going to do the 8 hours of writing a day and do it as a job. It's just not going to be me. So I try to strike while the iron is hot. That's probably really bad writing advice. But I have to admit, when I'm inspired by something, that's when the work kind of comes, and it gets revised. Like, don't get me wrong, there's a ton of revision that goes into every poem, and that takes place over time. But getting that draft onto the page is the first step, and oftentimes the one that I put off. I don't know why. It's some, like, we need a psychology professor on here to tell us it's
Yes.
honest.
Yes. In the interview that you had with the library, you guys were talking about what's a poem. And I kind of giggled when I saw that part because I had an interview with her name is Zilka Joseph. She's in the Michigan area. She teaches, have been writing and teaching for a long time. And she had mentioned everything you write is not a poem. So I was like asking her, what do you mean by that? Like, who are you to say that what I wrote isn't a poem if that's what I meant it to be? And she said, more so the way she looked at it is that when you write a poem, you have to go back and you have to change it. It's not a poem when you first put it on the page. You have to add the structure, you have to add the components that make up a poem. And you were kind of saying the same thing. So I get that. Whereas before, and I'm pretty sure other people are probably saying, well, I wrote it, it's a poem. And that's what it is. But it's so important to go back and to make updates. And I know why I do it, but can you tell me why you think it's important to go back and revise your poem and why the first draft isn't good enough sometimes?
The poem, no, at some point there's a stopping place. Like, we all have to decide, when this is cooked and like ready to go out. But for me, I know that the more revision that takes place, the better the poem is going to be. And I think it's because as I go through the poem, I'm always discovering new things about my perception of things. And so, good discovery can't happen all in one pass. It has to happen over several passes. And so I'm always discovering new ways to describe something that feel more accurate or more true. than before. And I'll remember things over the course of revision that I, you know, didn't remember in my first pass. I will be inspired by something new. I'll become more brave usually over the course of revision, which I think is interesting. Like, I'm kind of, when I first get it down on the page, I'm like a little bit tentative about it, like, but as I revise, I'm more willing to divulge things that are maybe a little bit scary to me, or I don't know, like just exposing myself in some way that feels nerve-wracking. And so I have to stick with the revision, or else those things aren't going to come up. And then the poem is just an email. You know, I mean, like I could have written an email, or I could have written an essay, which is not to disparage email writing and essays. There's an art form to that too. And in fact, I posted the other day on Facebook, how do I write an essay? I just posted, how do I write an essay? And I got some amazing responses from my friends and from people on Facebook, because I have an idea and I don't think it's a poem and I want to write about it. And I don't know how, because I don't know how to write an essay. So I got lots of good responses. I need to like go through those and kind of, you know, figure it out. But there it is, right? It's like, I know that this is not a poem. So it's going to have to be something else if I want to get it onto the page.
Oh, wow. Essays. I don't think I've written an essay since high school. That's scary to think about. That's so scary to think about. Now, as the poet laureate, I know you're out doing a lot of things. And I think in the last couple of years, I think Christopher D. Sims said this. He kept saying there's a renaissance of poetry happening in the city. There's so many things where people are incorporating poetry. Can you tell me all the stuff that you're doing? What's the most challenging part of being the poet laureate?
Oh my gosh. Let's see, the most challenging part. I think I personally had to push myself to go into spaces that are, this is going to sound kind of weird coming from me, but I have had to do a lot of like public readings to large crowds of people and to go into spaces that are full of strangers. And that's been really hard for me at points, to enter into a room of people that I don't know and be alone. And to know that, you know, this is not, it is my audience because they're there, but it's also not my typical audience. You know, I'm not preaching to the choir of people that typically come to poetry readings or, you know, literary types. I'm going into spaces where I'm reading a poem, but the audience is there for another reason, you know? And so that can feel like pressure to me to provide an experience for people that is going to ingratiate them to poetry and not propel them from it. I'll use an example. I mentioned earlier that I was asked to write a poem for the YMCA for their gala. And this was about a month ago. And I thought, you know, the theme for their gala was belonging. And so they gave me this theme and they said, you know, just write something about belonging. And so I decided to write about the dictionary definition of belonging, which is not very interesting sounding. However, I went into the Oxford English Dictionary, which provides the history of words. And I was able to learn some stuff about the history of the word belonging and incorporate that into the poem. And the audience seemed to like that, you know, like in the moment, they seemed to be right there with me in that moment of talking about, you know, belonging, not just as a theme or as this abstract feeling that we have, but as a word and something that we actually experience when we walk into the doors of a place like the YMCA. So, just making sure that I'm a good ambassador for poetry can feel like a lot of pressure, because it's not like everybody's favorite thing to talk about. But I think that Rockford has, there is a renaissance going on around poetry. Chris is right. And it seems like people are kind of clamoring for it right now. So that's really unexpected, exciting.
Now, I want to talk about your teaching career.
Oh my goodness, so many surprises along the way. I've taught poetry sporadically over the years. I haven't really consistently taught a poetry class, but I've taught it sporadically, and I've taught everybody from, high school students to master's students. And I think there isn't much that binds all of those learners together other than a little bit of a trepidation always at approaching poetry. There's always stories about, oh God, this class that I took in high school, it was awful. We only read Antigone, I don't even, or whatever. And I really didn't like that. Or, I hear a lot of folks who will lead off with the statement, and this always, this cracks me up. It's like they feel the need to, I'm like a priest, and they feel they need to like confess this to me, but they'll say like, I'm not a poet. Okay, got it. Like, that's okay. If you don't identify that way, that's fine. But you may learn something about expressing yourself, or you may learn something about language and how fun it is in that context. So everybody seems a little bit nervous about it when I encounter them. And it doesn't matter if they're the high school student or the person who's, the master's student. There's always that. Those nerves associated with it. And I haven't done any research on where that comes from, but I do think about why. Maybe it has something to do with, again, our upbringing around the kinds of poetry that we're exposed to as children. I'm not really sure. So I do try to create an environment for students that is trying to rewrite those narratives around poetry.
It's kind of funny when you say that they say they're not a poet. A poet. It makes me think of what do we think a poet is, or who do we think a poet is? Is it like in our minds that we put them on this pedestal? Do we think about Shakespeare? We think about that level and say, I'm not there, so I'm not a poet. Anyone to me who writes poetry is a poet. That's to me, that's what it is. But I think we diminish ourselves and diminish our gifts because it's not the same as this person that is really known for their poetry. So I hate to hear that people are saying that they're not a poet when they have so much to offer.
I totally agree. I totally agree. I mean, when I figure out the tip at a restaurant on my bill, I don't start off with saying I'm not a mathematician, but we do it. And maybe that's not like a good one-on-one,
I
but
actually like that though,
okay.
but you're right. It's like
Yeah.
we are doing these things where we're saying, no, that's not who I am. Find
Right.
someone else to do
Right.
it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, Jenna, can you tell me you have several months more to go in this particular appointment? What do you want to do before you go? Like, what's the legacy that you want to leave as the Poet Laureate of Rockford?
Goodness. Wow. Oh my goodness. I have done so much that I did not even expect to be able to do. It's hard to answer that because I've just done so many things. I've read to elderly people. I've judged poetry contests for Jefferson High School's Poetry Slam. I have, been able to do my own workshops, which has been really nice. I've been able to do workshops for Family Peace Center and like other organizations in town. Like tomorrow night, I'm doing a open mic for the Liam Foundation that I'm really excited about. So that question is, it's, oh my gosh, I hope that I can just keep kind of going, you know, and keep doing the work of working individually with people, working with groups as well. I would love at some point to figure out a way to put together these what are called occasional poems. So the poems that I've been referencing that I've been commissioned for, there's kind of a growing group of those poems now, and I'd love a way to get those together into maybe like a pamphlet or a chapbook or something, and then sell them and donate proceeds to like some of those different organizations that commissioned the poetry. So I don't know if that's something that I can figure out how to do kind of after I'm done with an organization in town, put those together. But just, you know, continue to give back and hopefully stay on the radar of people even after I'm done in the role, because I want to continue doing this work. I really can't imagine my life without it at this point. It's been such an amazing and transformative couple of years for me.
Oh, that is wonderful. Now let's talk about the chapbooks that you do have out. You have 4 of them, and I think you said one of them is no longer in print. Tell me about those.
All of my chapbooks are little snapshots of parts of my life. Chapbooks, for folks who are not familiar with the genre, are just short books. They're snapshots. They're typically, they're much shorter than a full-length book, and they're more thematically tied together. So they might be on like a particular theme or a particular idea, whereas a book is more expansive. So I've got 4 of those. And as you said, one of them is out of print. So I don't think you can get your hands on one of those, but the other 3 are all available still. Dave Pedersen down at May's Books sells them, so you can get them down there. I'm really proud of all of them, but one of them in particular I'm very proud of because it was published by Press 254, which is the teaching press of Illinois State University. Teaching presses are very rare. They are composed of students, both undergraduates and then sometimes graduate students at universities or colleges who are on a publishing track in their degree. So they might be publishing majors or English majors who are wanting to go into publishing, and they need hands-on experience. So typically there will be like a press associated at the school with that publishing track, and the students will do everything involved from, you know, soliciting the manuscripts from people to typesetting to coming up with the cover and seeing the whole publication process through. And it's amazing to work with students on books. It's just such a great experience. So my book Title IX was published by the Teaching Press of Illinois State, Press 254. And so if you get it, you can see the trappings of that. You know, they're just, it's such a cool book. And you can see the students listed in there who worked on it. So it's really important to support small presses like Press 254.
Have you ever thought about self-publishing?
In some ways, I'm working on a project right now with a group of my friends. I don't want to say too much about it, but it's really fun. And we will definitely be self-publishing that because there's an audience for it. It's a small audience. And we just want to get it out in the world because it's going to be really funny. So in that case, I've thought about self-publishing, but I've typically published through more traditional routes in my time.
Yeah, I can tell that project is something you're so excited about because your face just lit up the whole time you were telling me about it.
You know, we're working on it. It's a collaborative poem, and there's about 8 of us, well, 6 to 8 of us kind of working on it. And so when you work together, the project takes its own timeline because we're all working on it at our own pace. So like, okay, like let's go, like I want to get this thing. It's great. So I'll let you know when it's done.
Oh, that sounds exciting. It reminds me when you said collaborative poem. I remember in Aurora, I was at this spoken or open mic, and it was a group, and I cannot remember the name of the group. And I'm gonna get in trouble if a certain person hears this because I can't remember the name of the group, but I should know it. But it was a group of poets, and they would come together. And it reminds me how you're sitting in the crowd, and then one person gets up and starts talking, and then another person on the other side of the room gets up, and this it's like this poem that they've written, and they're performing together. And all across the room, people are popping up from this group, adding their little piece to the poem, and it's all coming together. I love that. So when you said the book was collaborative, it just put that in my mind. And I
Oh,
don't
that's
see that too often.
no, that's that would be an incredible reading to just show up to and not know that that's what's about to happen. And I might, maybe I'll take a page from that book when we read from this project. What a cool idea to do with a public audience.
I like that. And even as the poet laureate, involving the youth poet laureate or past poet laureates, and that would be wonderful. That would be just a surprise. I would love to be in the audience if that ever happens. So you have to give me a heads up if you're planning on doing something like that.
I will.
Now I'm going to give you a moment to say another poem if you so like.
Okay, let's see here. What do I have at the ready?
And I love all the books in your background. I think I'm going to set up my computer where people can see my bookshelf.
It's scary what's beyond that. So I this is like the tidiest part of my whole house. I'm gonna read actually I'm gonna read from my manuscript that is I just got word that it's going to be published. This is my first full-length manuscript that's gonna be published. So I'm gonna read a poem from that. It's actually the first poem in the whole book. It's called Intimacy. And before I read it, it's a little irregular, put it that way. So bear with me if you start to wonder what's going on here. I think it'll become clear as the poem goes on. So the poem is called Intimacy, and it's for PG. After we meet, it's soap for lotion, lotion for toothpaste, toothpaste for eye cream, eye cream for lip balm for perfume, perfume for mouthwash, mouthwash for laundry detergent for underwear, underwear for tea towel for t-shirt for tank top for sock, sock for other sock for handkerchief for hand towel, hand towel for paper towel for water bottle for dish soap for hand soap for half and half for sour cream for cream cheese for creme fraiche for yogurt, yogurt for butter, butter for bread, bread for biscuits, biscuits for black tea for blackberries, blackberries for raisins, raisins for chocolate, chocolate for gravy, gravy for marmalade, marmalade for music, music for light bulb for watering can for bicycle, bicycle for blue jeans for bearskin for bed, bed for alarm clock for sleep, sleep for soap, soap for lotion.
Oh, I love how you took me on a journey. Like that sounds like a wonderful life. Can you tell me, is that a particular form or is that something you just came up, a form you created, I should say?
I think it might be something I created, very unfortunately, actually, because if you've ever had an encounter or an experience in your life that makes you so distracted and so not in the present necessarily that you've done something really stupid, this poem starts with the first line, which is, "After we meet, it's soap for lotion." Lotion for toothpaste. I will say I put lotion on my toothbrush after meeting somebody because I was so distracted. So that's what the poem is about. And then it's just this progression of when we're taken by somebody or we're thinking about something. That is what starts to kind of drive all of the things that we do, and we may start to kind of make some mistakes along the way. But it can be kind of, it's a trance, right? The poem is kind of, it puts you in this sort of trance, and there's something kind of magical and like funny about that.
Yeah, that's true. And that's funny that you talk about that because I'm constantly thinking about let me focus on me because we can get distracted and we can forget that sometimes relationships work best when we are just being ourselves
Yes.
and not getting caught up in what this other person wants or what this person is doing. Taking care of us, and that's when things fall into place. So I love that poem. It reminds me of that mindset. Okay, we're off base now. Let's get back to where we're supposed to be.
Right. It's a constant struggle, and it's like being on drugs, you're in a different place. But that I love what you say there about focusing on ourselves, and poetry is really good for that. Poetry is really grounding. And so when I'm feeling particularly kind of off base or off kilter, I just return to either reading or writing it, and that brings me back down to the ground.
And I'm still trying to understand how you put mistaked lotion for toothpaste, unless they were similar tubes. How?
They were similar tubes.
Okay, explain that to me.
Don't put the lotion and the toothpaste next to each other. That's the explanation on your bathroom counter. Just keep it nice and separate, one on each side. That's
So you
it.
have to tell me, Jenna, when you did that, when did you realize that had happened after you started brushing your teeth?
Put it in my mouth. And I've done this before. This is not the first time. I've put perfume in my hair. You have to mine those experiences, and that's what the poem is. I have this little saying I say to myself over and over, no poem without experience, no poem without experience. Like you have to have these kinds of head scratchers because that's where the very interesting poetry comes from.
And the one thing I learned, I love about poetry is that it doesn't have to be my experience. And if it is, unless you're close to me, you don't know. So it gives me the freedom and the courage to write about whatever I want to write about because you can think it's about me. It could be. Or maybe it's about something else. Maybe it's about a movie I saw. Maybe it's about somebody that I'm close to that don't want me telling their business. But. How they're not reading my poems anyway.
Right. I always tell people, I'm like, just be careful. I'm a poet. Just be careful,
Because I've done that and I'm thinking there's no way they'll ever know that I pulled from their experience because it's not enough details for them to know that, but their experience inspired me to write this. But people will read the poem and think it's about me. And I just love it. And there are poems that are about me that they don't know. And that to me is like it helps me have some type of be a little mysterious when I write. So that's why I love writing poetry.
Yes, indeed. And sometimes you have to really defamiliarize yourself with the topic in order to write about it. Like you almost have to make it so strange and so unrecognizable to yourself in order to get it onto the page.
Oh, I love that. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with me today. I hope that you do more and more wonderful things in your role as Poet Laureate. And after that, now, is there anything else you would like to share with me today, Jenna?
I want to say thank you so much for the work that you do, Yvonne, for talking about poetry and bringing poet voices to the people in our communities. Poetry is for everybody, and I think that the more we can provide experiences like this for people, the more comfortable they'll be picking up a book of poetry or going to a workshop or reading themselves and just enjoying it. That's what it's meant for.
Now, I know people could probably find you under the Poet Laureate of Rockford, but how else can they follow you?
So I'm active on Facebook. My profile is my name, and it's public, so you don't have to friend me if you don't want to. And I do post a lot on there about the stuff that I'm doing and other opportunities for writers in the area as well. And then I do have a website that I do my best to keep up, but I'm not super good at it. It's jennalgoldsmith.com. It does have links to my books and it's hard work keeping that updated. So do the best I can. And I have an Instagram as well, but Facebook and my website are probably the best ways to kind of check in and see what's going on with poetry.
Such a lovely conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Poetically Yours Extended Podcast. Listen to Poetically Yours every Friday on WNIJ and WNIU. Special thanks to the Nick Monte Trio Band for providing the tunes for this podcast. For Poetically Yours, I'm Yvonne Booz.